Our gospel lesson this morning comes from Matthew, the fourth chapter, verses 12 through 23. Now when Jesus heard that John was arrested, he went to Galilee. He left Nazareth and settled in Capernaum, which lies along the sea in the area of Zebulun and Naphtali. This fulfilled what Isaiah the prophet said, "Land of Zebulun and Naphtali, along the sea, across the Jordan, Galilee of the Gentiles. The people who live in the dark have seen a great light. And a light has come upon those who lived in the region and in shadow of death." From that time, Jesus began to announce, "Change your hearts and lives. Here comes the kingdom of heaven." As Jesus walked alongside the Galilee, see, he saw two brothers, Simon, who is called Peter, and Andrew, throwing fish nets into the sea, because they were fishermen. "Come, follow me," he said, "and I'll show you how to fish for people." Right away they left their nets and they followed him. Continuing on, he saw another set of brothers, James, the son of Zebedee, and his brother John. They were in a boat with Zebedee, their father, repairing their nets. Jesus called, and immediately they left their boat and their father, and they followed him. Jesus traveled throughout Galilee, teaching in their synagogues. He announced the good news of the kingdom and healed every disease and sickness among the people. News spread about him throughout Syria. People brought to him all those who had various kinds of diseases, those in pain, those possessed by demons, those with epilepsy, and those who were paralyzed, and he healed them. This is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. I love a good fishing story and a good hunting story. And around here, it's a regular topic of conversation when one of you heads off to the river or to the lake. You spend the weekend out in the stand or the field. Even when the fish aren't biting and the season is closed, there's always a good hunting or a fishing story circulating in this community of faith. One of my personal favorite fishing stories is not my own, but it's my father-in-law's. He and my mother-in-law were off fishing on a deep-sea charter off the coast of Hawaii, several miles out into the Pacific Ocean. And he had taken this charter so that he might go out fishing for a prized blue marlin. He was pumped, he was prepped, he was ready. He was strapped into the chair kind of with a safety harness in so that he wouldn't get pulled over fighting for this multi-hundred pound fish. And once that fish hit the line, that line started just flying, screaming off the reel. The fight began, and I mean, he starts sweating this thing out. He's cranking just one rotation at a time. Minute by minute, this continues. Determination just pouring out of his veins. The fight for this blue marlin was on. 45 minutes. The captain barking encouragement and instructions in his ear so he doesn't lose this thing. And finally, he had brought it in. I promise you, that fish was like this big. It's probably bigger than that. I almost had a story like that one time. But I'm pretty sure that the amberjack that was on the end of that hook was eaten by a shark. At least that explains why it never got into the boat. My fish stories and yours probably aren't nearly as dramatic as the reeling of that blue marlin. Probably more like casting and reeling, pulling the line back in, casting and reeling, pulling the line back in. The intense sun baking down on your neck, maybe a frigid, cool wind blowing across the bow. There's a monotony that comes with fishing. There's nothing going on, just that rhythm of the line going out and coming back. When it's all done, the fisherman heads back to the shore, cleans the net, cleans up the rod, puts it out to dry, processes the fish, maybe makes a repair to the boat, and rests before doing it again the next day. This is an ordinary routine conducted day in and day out, the life of a fisherman. Jesus' first four disciples called to share in his public ministry are Galilean fishermen: Simon, his brother Andrew, James, and John, the sons of Zebedee. All four of them are working the waters on the Sea of Galilee, a body of water that, as I understand it, has about the same surface area as Watts Bar Lake out in East Tennessee. Though the Sea of Galilee and Watts Bar Lake are quite dissimilar in shape. Fishing is the family business for these guys. They're not likely making much profit out of this endeavor. There are high extortion level taxes that are levied on them. They are not nearly as rich as aristocratic landowners, but they're not as poor as the shepherds that met baby Jesus out in the field. Jesus is walking by the Sea of Galilee one day. It's a great way to spend a leisurely afternoon in Capernaum. Capernaum sits right on the shoreline, on the northern end of the sea. Jesus is out and he sees the brothers and he issues them more of a directive than he does an invitation. Come, follow me. And they do it. He tries his luck a second time with James and John. They're out in the boat and he calls to them, come, follow me. These four men are told to take their skills, their professional life, the work they do with their hands, and do it in a new way to demonstrate the arrival of God's reign in the community. The whole back and forth would have made a lot more sense if he had gone out to them and says, I have a proposition. Come, follow me, and I will make you wealthier than you could ever imagine. Come, follow me, and you're not going to have to worry about carving out an existence, eating hand to mouth. He promises them nothing. He does not tell them where they are headed. He offers little indication about what this fishing for people might actually entail. They have no indication. If this is a short-term endeavor, come spend the weekend with me, or come spend your entire life because you're not heading back to what you were doing before. We have the privilege of knowing that it's their life's calling. They spend the rest of their waking days following, furthering Jesus' ministry of healing and redemption and bringing people into God's reign on earth. I don't think they knew the distances that they would go on foot, the turmoil they might face in bringing God's promise of renewal and restoration to their neighbors. Tradition says that Simon Peter was crucified upside down for his love of Jesus the Christ and his service to the church. His brother Andrew didn't fare much better, crucified for preaching throughout Asia Minor. James was slain by the sword at the decree of one of Herod's sons. James's brother John, the only one of the 12 disciples who said to have died of a natural death. Come, follow me bore a heavy toll in the lives of these men and for so many others across the ages. And that's the part of the challenge in identifying with these two sets of brothers. Their entire life turns on a dime at the drop of a hat. They begin following Jesus the Christ, and it's never the same. There's nothing gradual about their conversion stories. It's immediate. From that point on, when they leave their nets to follow him, they begin their work to announce and demonstrate that God's promises are near. They end up in places that they would not have ventured to on their own. They end up in a relationship with folks that they had not would not have spent time with otherwise. Cultural and religious sense would have said otherwise. There are times in life when following Jesus can be weighty, dramatic, immediate. People give up lucrative careers to start nonprofits to demonstrate that the reign of God means caring for economically disadvantaged persons. Families give up monster homes because there's this internal conflict that living in a multi-thousand square foot house just doesn't make good sense when neighbors are homeless. Retirees follow their heart's calling to be in missionary service, taking what they've learned over a long professional life and they go to teach agricultural skills and sustainable technology in Latin America. College students, young folks, change the course of their education and their early professional life to teach in the inner city schools because they went to summer camp, they led summer camp, and they fell in love with the city. Ivy League educated doctors decide that a private practice isn't quite worth it, and they head off to the world's forgotten people to offer care where it's so hard to come by. Following Jesus Christ can be dramatic, it can be urgent, and it can cause life to change at the drop of a hat. And I hope, I really do hope, that there are persons in your life who have experienced these sort of life-changing decisions and moves. Come, follow me, and they do that, and they leave it all behind, and they are faithful and fruitful in ministry. And perhaps this has already been your story, and perhaps it might be your story one day. I also don't want to sensationalize the story and say that the only way to follow Jesus Christ means leave the family behind, leave the house, leave the profession, for that's the only right way to do it. Like the ordinary rhythm of that fishing life, on a plain summer day, the life of following Jesus is lived out for many in this way. Ordinary acts every day. Our calling is to be faithful, to live God's grace on routine days in ordinary ways. This might mean extending a patient spirit to a toddler when you're already running late. It might mean thinking twice, refraining from cursing out that coworker that knows just how to hit those buttons and then doing it on purpose. It might mean cleaning out part of your schedule to spend time with a loved one who is ill or for whom you are a caretaker. It might mean extending a word of grace when that is the last thing that you want to do. It could mean standing up for a neighbor who suffers that has been forgotten. The life of discipleship, following Jesus in the everyday, the routine, the ordinary workings of life with family and friends and co-workers. Come, follow me is an invitation that is for all of us. Maybe there will be a young person or even a family that's called into missionary service that we will bless and send forth from this community. But I guarantee that every single one of us will have an opportunity to extend compassion to a hurting world in a time of crisis, in a time of grief. Come, follow me will mean being compassionate and merciful. It'll be that way this afternoon. It'll be that way tomorrow morning. Maybe one of you will be a champion, a flag bearer for justice to make sure that we never forget the suffering of our homeless brothers and sisters. And whether or not one of you lives into that calling, maybe you won't. I do guarantee that all of us will have the opportunity to be in ministry, to extend hospitality with good home-cooked food, warm words of grace with room in the inn this weekend. It is a both and. Some of us, come follow me, will mean utterly life-changing decisions. For others, it will mean showing up in ordinary, routine, everyday kind of ways. The way in which we grow in love of God, in love with spouses and partners each day, the care that is entrusted to us in looking after children, the way in which we treat co-workers, demonstrating mercy, serving neighbors, those are the ordinary, familiar benchmarks in being faithful to that invitation, that directive, really, that Jesus offers to Simon and Andrew, James and John, come follow me. And who knows, when the Spirit moves, the Spirit is going to move in a powerful way. And it may be a radical transformation for one of you, for your family, or maybe even for this entire community of faith, called in such a deep new decision, because we know that when Jesus says, come, follow me, how meaningful that opportunity and invitation is. Bless you in the one of the name, in the name of the one who teaches fishermen how to do what they do in a new and powerful way. Remember that Jesus offers you this. Come, follow me. Amen.